this discourse appear in Samyutta Nikaya, Salayatana Samyutta, Asivisavagga, and it's called Exposition on the Corrupted. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans at Kapilavattu in Nigrodha's park. Now, on that occasion, a new assembly hall had just been built for the Sakyans of Kapilavattu, and it had not yet been inhabited by any ascetics or Brahmins or by any human beings at all. Then the Sakyans of Kapilavattu approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable Sir, a new council hall has just been built for the Sakyans of Kapilavattu, and it has not yet been inhabited by any ascetic or Brahmin or by any human being at all. Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One be the first to use it. When the Blessed One has used it first, then the Sakyans of Kapilavattu will use it afterward. That will lead to their welfare and happiness for a long time." The Blessed One consented by silence. Then when the Sakyans understood that the Blessed One had consented, they rose from their seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on their right, they went to the new assembly hall. They covered it thoroughly with mats, prepared seats, put out a large water jug, and hung up an oil lamp. Then they approached the Blessed One and informed him of this, adding, "Let the Blessed One come at his own convenience." Then the Blessed One dressed and taking golden robe, went together with Sangha of bhikkhus to the new assembly hall. After washing his feet, he entered the hall and sat down against the central pillar facing east. The bhikkhus, too, after washing their feet, entered the hall and sat down against the western wall facing east, with the Blessed One in front of them. The Sakyans of Kapilavattu, too, after washing their feet, entered the hall and sat down against the eastern wall facing west, with the Blessed One in front of them. I mean, these things are happening even today, that when the Buddhist monks are coming in, they wash their feet and coming in, sort of all these customs. And then when people are actually doing for houses also, they actually ask Buddhist monks to come and do that. And so these things are happening in Sri Lanka and Buddhist countries. Then Blessed One then instructed, exhorted, inspired, and gladdened the Sakyans with the Dhamma talk through much of the night, after which he dismissed them, saying, "The night has passed, Gotamas. You may go at your own convenience." "Yes, Venerable Sir," they replied. Then they rose from their seats, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on their right, they departed. Then not long after the Sakyans of Kapilavattu had left, the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Moggallana thus: "The Sangha of Bhikkhu is free from sloth and torpor. Moggallana, give a Dhamma talk to the Bhikkhus. My back is aching, so I will stretch it." "Yes, Venerable Sir," the Venerable Mahamoggallana replied. Then the Blessed One prepared his outer robe, folded in four, and lay down on his right side in the lion's posture, with one foot overlapping the other, mindful and clearly comprehending, after noting in his mind the idea of rising. Thereupon the Venerable Moggallana addressed the bhikkhu thus: "Friend bhikkhus, so Buddha is always sleeping in this lion's posture on the right side, and you can see this Buddha statues, has got this way of sleeping, and Buddha actually advised us to do the same as well, sleeping in that posture." So then now the Venerable Moggallana is speaking Dhamma. "I will teach you, friends, an exposition on the corrupted and the uncorrupted. Listen to it and attend closely. I will speak." "Yes, friend," those bhikkhus replied. The Venerable Moggallana said this: "How, friend, is one corrupted? Here, having seen a form with the eye, a bhikkhu is intent upon a pleasing form and repelled by displeasing form. He dwells without having set up mindfulness of the body, with a limited mind, and he does not understand, as it really is, that liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, wherein those evil, unwholesome states cease without remaining there." So this is really nice in Pali. That is actually say this chakkuna rupam disva from I having seen a form. Pyarupi rupe adhi muchati. Whatever thing the beautiful, that very well formed form. that he attached with or inclined towards that one. Apirupe vyakachati. So he is angry about the form, that displeasing form. Anupattita kaya sati ca viharati. That is a really good word over there. Anupattita kaya sati ca viharati means that the mindfulness regarding the body has not been established. So that's very important. If the mindfulness as regards to body has not been established, then we are in the limited mind. Whenever we have the mindfulness regarding body has been established, we are in the unlimited mind. Buddha said that one for the mental objects as well. So we need to have the mindfulness regarding body. It's the minimum thing. That is that one would contemplate that about the body, that this body of these two parts, you know, the hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, all those things, or the dead bodies, or this body in terms of the elements, element of extension, element of heat, element of motion, and element of having seen that one, then he actually contemplates about the arising phenomena and the passing away phenomena. So that is the mindfulness. So he knows whenever he sees a body that this is such and such. It's like that, you know, the butcher, for example, cutting down parts of a cow. You know, this is this leg part, the meat, and so on. Likewise, these are the elements. And the rising phenomena is that one sees delight in this form, welcomes it, remain whole into it. By doing it, this delight in form arises. So delight in form as a condition that there is this craving, because that delight in form is called craving. As craving as condition, there is clinging, as clinging as condition, there is existence of the very same craving. Because of the existence of the craving, there is this birth. So with the birth, there you get this eye, ear, nose, tongue and the body. So he understands whenever he sees a form, the form is such, then this is the arising phenomenon. And form is such, this is the passing away phenomenon. So that is, one does not seek delight in form, does not welcome it, does not remain holy. So therefore, there is no delight in form, there is no craving. Since there is no craving, there is no existence. And since there is no existence, no, there is no birth. If there is no birth, there is no arising phenomena of these material things. So he understands whenever he sees this form. If he does not understand that one, that is this anupattita kaya sati, he has not got this one established in him. So he is in the limited mind. His limited mind is whatever thing that he actually sees, that particular form, his eye catches that one and holds into that form. And now he can't actually see anything further than that one either, because it's a very limited thing that he actually perceives. You know? He cannot think beyond that square. So, anupattita kaya sati ca viharati paricchate, so limited mind. Tanta techo vimutti panya vimutti yathabhuta napajana. So that means he does not understand as it really is, that liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom. So there are these two liberations. Liberation, meditate, you go into a higher concentrations, and then, so having reached very high concentration, there is this liberation of the mind, because due to concentration, that means that that time he has actually first got rid of this unskilled states of the mind about this lustful thoughts, all abandoned, and his mind is rapturous, and then he actually going beyond rapture, he become pleasurable, going beyond pleasure, he become going to the equanimity state, and he can go into the further states, so the refined version of the equanimity. So at that particular time, it's like a lotus petal. That water does not stand on that one, it just go away. Any ideas that is coming up, all just goes away with that mind. So it is further and further that this refined nature of the mind, and there is this liberation due to it. And there is also the liberation due to wisdom, that would get the knowledge, that understanding about the Four Noble Truth itself, understanding that this is suffering, this is leading to the suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Having understood that one, there is this liberation as well. So now here you can see that it is a one paragraph over here. It's quite a lot to take in that one. So one would know that those evil unwholesome states all cease without a remainder when one will liberating this way. So the person who does not know this, he goes with that particular form, And so Buddha said the same thing for the sound, the same thing, and the mental phenomena. And he, with the mind, he is intent upon pleasing mental phenomena and repelled by a displeasing mental phenomena. He dwells without having set up mindfulness of the body, with a limited mind. And he does not understand as it really is that liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, wherein whose evil unwholesome state cease without remainder. And so this is the thing called corrupted. And probably we can now look at that piece of paper, there's one over there, that I gave, and that is this first side about that grace, how greed and hate, all those things come to arise. So you can see how we are getting corrupted. So first line, you can see that this greed molds itself by means of the agreeable object. And it is coming from this Petakopadesa, Kuddaka Nikaya. This is how it explains. Again, what does the unprofitable root greed mold itself form? It does itself form. The threefold object is the agreeable, disagreeable, and that provocative of onlooking infinity. The unprofitable root greed molds itself therefore by means of the agreeable object. So, with an agreeable object, there is contact to be felt as pleasant. Depending on contact to be felt as pleasant, pleasant feeling arises. Depending on pleasant feeling, the approach with joy arises. Dependent on the approach with joy, lust arises. Depending on lust, sensual desire thinking arises. Depending on sensual desire thinking, lust-born fear arises. Depending on lust-born fear, the determined characteristic arising arises. Depending on the determined characteristic arising, painfulness in change arises. So, although it's if you look at that diagram over here, you can see the first thing is the agreeable object. There is some pleasant object that we like. And because of that one, there is this contact to be felt as pleasant. So that contact, I feel as pleasant. So two different persons might have, one might it be pleasing, the other one, it is not. I like it, someone says I don't like it. So that means it is internal, it's just a construction. And so depending on that contact, there is this pleasant feeling. So approach with joy, pleasant feeling, lead to the approach with joy. It's actually called somanasa pavichara in Pali. And this person is now actually approaching the same object with happiness. You know, he's happy to see that particular form. And mentally, he's actually approaching. So, because of this one, this lust arises, raga. And because of the lust, sensual desire thinking arises. Now, this is called kama vitakka in Pali. He is now thinking about this thing very heavily. Maybe it's someone that you like to see, that this person actually just passed away. Now, that person has gone. And we are mentally, we are processing that particular person. You know, that this whatever the pleasurable things comes up, our mind is tend to go back to that object repeatedly. And so this is happening. So when the sensual desire thinking arises, lust-born fever arises. Now this person really needs whatever that object is. It may be food that has seen and its burning desire is there that I want to eat it. I want to have that. I would have that person or whatever thing it is that will coming up. The craving. And now you can see the next step is the constructed characteristic. Arises. It's very difficult to translate this one into in Pali, in English. In Pali, it is upadu sankata lakkana. That means that upadi is arising, sankata is constructed, lakkana is characteristic. So, what is actually arising is that you see, we construct something, you know, because of this having seen this particular form, agreeable form. We have got this lust-born fever and all those things. Now it is actually in our heart. It is very strongly taken. Now because of that one, we are going to be born in the next birth and so on. Because we are holding to these things. So this arising thing is there. So forget about the part that you are going to be born. Let's take that particular example where you have seen someone and then this thing is actually happening in the mind. And if that person is vanishing, you can see the effect on you. That person is gone. Now you can see, you can feel how much this one is. So there was this arising phenomena because you have seen and the mentally constructed something in the mind. Mentally constructing whatever thing in the mind, that is this construction. So that there is this arising phenomena of that thing, whatever the object, you name it, it is there in the mind that is constructed. So there is the arising phenomena has there. So what is happening with the arising phenomena, whatever thing that arises, subject to pass away. So the next one is actually painfulness in change arises. That particular thing changed, that is vanished, passed, there is a change. So if you think about a person, for example, maybe you are thinking about a young person, beautiful person, and later on that is subject to aging. So you can see that change is now arising. If you have the birth, if there is birth, if you take the good example, then you can see that there is this aging and sickness. So you can see this aging and sickness is the one that is actually happening from the first part over here. If it is born, because there was this upada sankara, that is this arising phenomena, that is this birth. And then as a birth, as a condition, what we have is aging, sickness, death scenario.
The problem is actually because at that age, people don't think about what is going to happen to the body, isn't it? So that's why all these clinging and all these things are.
Yes. Not knowing. It is actually the third part over here. Not knowing that one, and we actually clinging and holding to that one, and then we are suffering. What Buddha is telling over here is whatever the agreeable form is, then it is actually, there is this arising phenomena, and that arising phenomena leads to this change of the thing. There is nothing permanent in the world. So that's the it's called, the Pali it's called Viparinama Dukkata. Viparinama dukkata, painfulness in change. So in the second path, you can see, hate molds itself by means of the agreeable object, means of the disagreeable object. So having seen a disagreeable object, contact to be felt as painful. That person that I don't like to see, or sound that I don't like to hear, smell I don't like to smell. So painful feeling arises. And that approach with grief arises, domanasa pavichara in Pali, approach with grief. So when there is this approach with grief, then the dosa, that is hate arises. Now the thinking, everything will become hateful, that ill will thinking arises. Now having got this ill will thinking, that the hate bone fever arises. That person that we have seen, that we don't like, that he has actually gone. You had the sight of that person, he is now gone. But he is gone, but this person is now, angry and fighting with his mind, that blaming that person did this, all those things, that now is burning with the anger.
So that's previous volitional formation?
Well, that is your inbuilt characteristic, that you got the previous volitional formation that lead to the first thing over here, that when I see that person that I don't like him, now having got that feeling and perception, then keep on going in that one, because that there is that object that you like to see, and what I see is that opposite of that one. So I don't like this. I like that for him to behave differently. So him or her or whatever, even the dog. So there is this hate-borne fever. So when this happens, there's this constructed characteristic alteration, that which stands arises. Titasa anyatattam sankata lakkana. That is that normally we think that certain things, having seen a beautiful thing, or having seen that life is such and such, I like this, the environment, I like all those things. So we hold into those things. It's actually we are going through the first path, having got these pleasurable things. Now, what happened? That situation all of a sudden changed. There may be tsunami, earthquakes, or that someone passing away, or something will happen. Oh, that there was a person that you like to see and happy, and then that person was replaced. Let's say you have a supervisor. That person was really good, and then that person was replaced by a really bad person. Okay. So then you can see that there is this alteration of that which stands. Alteration of that same person that I like to see and, you know, be there. Now he was replaced by somebody else. Now I have the this alteration of that which stands, changing phenomena is actually happening. So what is that one is called dukkha dukkata in Pali. Painfulness as pain arises. So you should distinguish this one between the first one. First one is actually viparinama dukkata. That is, you know, that there is this changing, like aging sort of thing. Now if you think about the first noble truth, you can see that this is something like union with displeasing things. You know, you have the union with pleasant things, union with the displeasing things. So you can see that alteration is there.
What is
one is called dukkha dukkata in Pali. The other one is viparinama dukkata. So painfulness as pain arises. So this is the bad part, right? And then with the fourth path, delusion more step by means of neither agreeable nor disagreeable object. Neither agreeable nor disagreeable object, and because of that one, then there is the contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant. Like that you are sitting down, sort of a chair, neither comfortable nor discomfortable, so I'm happy with that one. So there is this contact arises, neither happy nor unhappy. So because of that one, neither painful nor pleasant feeling arises. And then there is this approach with onlooking equanimity. So that means that there is this equanimity sort of regarding that chair or regarding that particular form. You know, we see certain people, we don't dislike them, we don't like them either. It's just that sort of thing. So there is this equanimity. That equanimity is a very limited equanimity. It doesn't exceed that particular form. If I talk about this chair that is neither pleasurable nor painful, then it is only regarding this one. It's not generalized to all the other chairs. So that's limited in that sense as well. So this because of this one, there is this equanimity, and so there's delusion arises. So this person does not know that this chair is going to break, you know, that this will not stand like this one, then somebody will come and take it, or that sort of thing. He has the ignorance over there. He does not know how, that this is impermanent, that he does not know this is impermanent. He does not know the arising phenomena, passing away phenomena of the same thing. So,
is it accepted because of that ignorance?
Yeah.
Yeah, and is it related to that previous, practices in previous lives too?
For that equanimity, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, this equanimity is a very mundane level equanimity, but it is better than the first two. You know, the first one is actually we are going through one path, it's a craving path. The second one, we are angry path. When we are angry, then we have the two problems, right? And also, I am saying it is better than this one. Buddha said it is in this book again. There are times on earth and everywhere, it is just that people don't have this dukkha dukkata, you know, painfulness and pain, because that they have, when people become moral, they live for a long time, 80,000 years, 100,000 years sort of thing. They have very few sickness, only four sickness like that one. So this dukkha dukkata is sort of thing is not actually known and seen. But still, they go to the fourth one, third line over here. That is the most difficult for someone. The other two, you can see, you can actually sort of analyze and see that, yes, this is happening to me, and sort of thing. And so the delusion arises, and the cruelty thinking arises because of that one.
How can you go to cruelty thinking if you are... neither you attached or you like or dislike. So how do you get a cruel thinking?
Well, it is it is a bit hard to explain. Let us say that you are a so powerful person. You have so much power. You can destroy anything and you know, sort of thing. And you have the equanimity level, this sort of equanimity level. And because neither you attach to that creature, nor you angry about the creature, you have the power, you can do anything. Because if you are attached to that one, you don't destroy it, right? The anger normally lead to the, you know, the destruction or throwing away or sort of thing. But this thought, you can see if you actually meditate, it is there. In a very, it is not as bad as that you are actually thinking about the cruelty in the normal sense, you know, that, but this thought, because that if person or a creature is coming over here and I have the power, I don't want or I don't, you know, sort of thing, I don't care, all those things are there, and it leads to this one. It's very difficult to understand unless you are actually there.
Yeah, because it's still the person doesn't know it is a cruelty.
Mm.
Isn't it? It's yes. Like, for an example, in a class, if you have a child who doesn't listen, the teacher doesn't try to do the things, and when it is come to a stage, then the teacher would just ignore.
Mm.
But it is not good for the kid's life.
Yeah. So the cruelty thinking is very thing is there, and so because of that one, there is the delusion born fever arises, and so, and then there is this constructed characteristic passing, vayasankata lakkhana. For example, that if someone is born, then this person is dying. So, this is the death part over here, vayasankata. Because of the ignorance that these constructions come to arise, because of the ignorance that we have, you know, that I said that in this book again mentioned, that even that those, you know, 80,000 years living sort of time also, people go in this path, third path, and they will be born, and they will be passing away, death sort of thing. So if you are looking for example, so death is an example over here. So then, vayasankata lakkhana, constructed characteristic, passing arises or vanishing, and that is lead to the painful constructions. It is that sankara dukkata or sankata dukkata in Pali, because that two different version of the Tripitaka says two different things. In the Pali text version says sankata, and the singular version says sankara dukkata. So painfulness in construction, like that the bridge over there constructed is, you know, the fallen, broken, you know, there is this sanskara dukkata. So what we have over here is this sanskara dukkata, you know, by having going through this path, we, because of the ignorance, we were born, and there is this aren't we suffering, we are going to working, going home, repeatedly doing the same thing whether you like it or not, and with this body we need to put it to sleep, turn this way, turn that way, get up in the morning, put the alarm, you know, wash. All those things, if you don't think about that, you know, how much trouble I am trying to maintain this thing. You know, all these are sanskara, our volitional formations. And so there is this suffering because of that. So you can see that what Venerable Moggallana said in that discourse is a very lengthy, that short path over here, going through these lengthy things. So similarly, having heard the sound and the mental things, the same thing happening. Where that is the, what we are doing is we are actually attaching. Oh, we have the anger regarding those forms we have seen. This is called, friend, a bhikkhu who is corrupted amidst forms cognizable by the eye. Corrupted amidst sounds cognizable by the ear. Corrupted amidst odors cognizable by the nose. Corrupted amidst taste cognizable by the tongue, corrupted amidst tactile object cognizable by the body, corrupted amidst mental phenomena cognizable by the mind. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, if Mara approaches him through the eye, Mara gains access to him, Mara gets hold on him. If Mara approaches him through the ear, Through the mind, Mara gains access to him. Mara gets hold on him. Suppose, friends, there is a shed made of reeds or of grasses, dried up, desiccated, past its prime. If a man approaches it from the east with a blazing grass torch, or from the west, or from the north, or from the south, or from below, or from above, whichever way he approaches, if the fire gains access to it, the fire gets hold on it. So too, friend, when a bhikkhu dwells thus, if a Mara approaches him through the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind, Mara gains access to him. So you can see that the east, south, north, west, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, those are the six things. Hmm?
Yeah, I have a question actually, because if there is a, let's say there is a blind person, born blind person, that person has never, maybe that person doesn't know that there is something called that you see things from eye. So that whatever the, there's no volitional formation because of that, because he hasn't seen the object.
They actually think, they actually imagining.
Okay. Yeah, but because of that,
if you
they
touch
are
this,
like that.
Yeah, well, if you touch this form, you can see that this is like that, this is rough. No, they touch it and sort of thing. So they imagine sort of thing. So there is this mental forms that they are actually constructing, although they do not actually see the form. So there are other parts are really sensitive as well. So they are grabbing on very heavily to whatever thing they can actually hear, smell and things. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, forms overwhelm him. He does not overwhelm form. Sounds overwhelm him. He does not overwhelm sounds. So that means that all those things are actually overpowers him. He can't overpower form. Form is overpowering him. And similarly, tactile objects. And this is called friend of bhikkhu who is overwhelmed by forms, overwhelmed by sounds, overwhelmed by odors, overwhelmed by taste, overwhelmed by tactile objects, overwhelmed by mental phenomena. One who is overwhelmed and who does not overwhelm. Evil unwholesome states have overwhelmed him. States that defy, that lead to renewed existence, that bring trouble, that results in suffering, and that lead to future birth, aging and death. So by this eye, ear, nose, tongue and the body and the mind, what we are acquiring is completely suffering. Buddha said in one discourse, if you seek delight in the eye, then you seek delight in suffering. If you seek delight in suffering, I say that you will not be free from suffering. If I seek delight in the eye, I'm seeking delight in suffering, because I'm acquiring all these things. You know, that you can see I'm going through these three paths over here. Having gone through those ones, then we get the renewed existence, next birth and so on. So again suffering. So we have done this before, because we have been born as human beings, divine beings, and we are going to do it again, again and again. And same, having seen that this is suffering now a little bit and having a little enjoyment, well, forgetting all the other things. And going through this again, and for what reason, that one has to think, you know.
This is like the ignorance that if we're born in ignorance, and then we just have this inner tendency to corruption, to repeating from before.
Yes. Previous ones, actually, when you see a form, why we actually say that this one is agreeable to me, it was because of our previous corruptions. Previous corruptions is now constructing. This is the form you like to see. This is the form. This is the feeling when you see that form. This is the perception you get when you see that one. Buddha said it constructs the volitional formation, the habitual tendencies, the former ones. It constructs conditioned form as form. It constructs conditioned feeling as feeling. It constructs conditioned perception as perception. It constructs conditioned volitional formation and volitional formation. It constructs conditioned consciousness as consciousness. Sankatam abhisankaranti impala. It is constructing the same thing. What you have constructed before is now constructed back to you. Having eaten some food before that was tasty, then when you see in a party or somewhere that particular, that's the food that I like to eat, that you like to eat, it is coming. But you haven't tasted this one. This may be actually really bad. Having tasted, then you say, oh, this is not like that one. See, how do we know? We just saw it. There is this eye contact, merely eye contact. Now this is constructed. Arahants won't construct this one. They are liberated from that one. Having seen that one, they know that this is, I have got rid of. So we construct from the previously constructed thing, we reconstruct it. So we say, I agree with that one, I like this one, and then sense in someone, we say, I don't like him, I don't like this thing, and so on. Ignorance. Yes, yes. Yeah, because that with the ignorance is that in the neutral feeling, tendency to ignorance lies latent in the neutral feeling. So what is that ignorance is that he does not know the arising phenomena, passing away phenomena, satisfaction, danger and escape regarding that neutral feeling. You can see that is more dangerous. You know, in the the pleasurable feeling, there is tendency to attachment. So you know only one thing is there and you are getting attached sort of thing. The displeasure feeling, there is this tendency to aversion, that I don't like you, so it's only one. In the other case, there are five. That the do not know the arising phenomena, do not know they are the passing away phenomena, do not know the satisfaction, and there's very little satisfaction in these forms. For example, if you take food, you just eat, and it's just going through that, up to that one, and that's all, isn't it? After that, there's nothing, then you know what the rest is, right? So very little satisfaction, and much suffering. How much trouble we have to, you know, earn money to, just to get this food.
We spend whole money to please this
thing.
From here to here.
Yeah. So, do not know the satisfaction as satisfaction, and do not know the danger. Danger is that these things are impermanent, you know, that is subject to vanishing, passing away. And do not know the escape. Escape is that the abandonment of desire and lust for the very same thing is the escape. So not knowing that one, then we have this ignorance. So it's a really big thing over there.
This is not good when there is the ignorance, but the other equanimity state with the wisdom or with the, that is good.
That is great. Mm-hmm. That wisdom is actually is the best one. It is that lead to the enlightenment, where you actually having got the equanimity for the chair, having observing that this impermanent nature of the chair, you got rid of this chair and every other chair in the world from your mind, right? And is applying to every material thing, every feeling. Even it is applying to the equanimity feeling as well. So having achieved the equanimity feeling, then you having understood that the equanimity is also constructed, he gets rid of the desire for that one, so he is going to the liberation level. So that's the path get rid of. So then Venerable Moggallana now explain, and how, friends, is one uncorrupted here, having seen a form with the eye, because not intent upon pleasing form and not repelled by a displeasing form. So this sometimes called anurodha virodha as well, that whatever thing pleasurable, we grab it, whatever thing displeasurable, you know, we repel it. So this is the thing we need to pay quite a lot of attention to this one. Am I doing this? Yes, I am doing it. So can I stop this one? You know, sort of thing. One has to examine. He dwells having set up mindfulness of the body. All whatever the body is, he knows that this is actually, this is the body, this is the arising phenomena, this is the passing away phenomena. He knows when you see a body or form. So his mind is measureless, with a measureless mind, and he understands as it really is that liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, wherein those evil unwholesome states cease without remainder, having heard a sound, having cognized a mental phenomena. So the same thing is not intent upon pleasing mental phenomena and not repelled by displeasing mental phenomena. He dwells having set up mindfulness of the body with measureless mind. He understands as it really is that liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, wherein those evil unwholesome states cease without remainder. So this is the opposite of what he was doing. And there is this discourse, again we discussed this one before, it's called Mahatanna Sankhya Sutta. And so Buddha actually, this discourse is actually part of this discourse, Mahatanna Sankhya Sutta, what the Buddha delivered. And over here Buddha says, on seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at its signs and features. Having seen something, we are looking for the signs. How mostly, most of the time, our signs are color. What is the color? You are looking at the color. Signs and features. Since if we left the eye faculty unguarded, evil unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. So that these three paths, you know, if we keep it unguarded, that's what's going to happen. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the eye faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. So similarly for the sounds, smell, and you know, the taste, all those things. And Buddha said that he guards mind faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the mind faculty. Possessing this noble restraint of the faculties, he experiences within himself a bliss that is unsullied. So it is actually unsullied in the sense that it is not touched. You know, the when you see something, and if your eye is actually grabbing, go with that form, that means your eye is touched by that thing. Ear is touched. So he is now actually, if you guard it, then it's not touched. So you are free from that particular object that at that time, and you are free. Even contemplating about is, I got free from that one. So, this is called Abhyaseka Sukha in Pali. There's a Sukha, happiness, by doing that one. And Venerable Moggallana said that this is called friend of Bhikkhu who is uncorrupted and its form cognizable by the ear. Uncorrupted and its sounds cognizable by the ear. So, similarly, up to this mental phenomena cognizable by the mind. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, if Mara approaches him through the eye, Mara fails to gain access to him. Mara fails to get hold on him. If Mara approaches him through the ear, through the mind, Mara fails to gain access to him. Mara fails to get hold on him. Suppose, bhikkhu friends, there is a peat house on a hall built of thickly packed clay and freshly plastered. If a man approaches it from the east, with a blazing grass torch, or from the west, or from the north, or from the south, or from below, or from above, whichever way he approaches, if the fire fails to gain access to it, the fire fails to get hold on it, so too bhikkhu, when bhikkhu dwells thus, if Mara approaches him through the eye, mind, Mara fails to gain access to him, Mara fails to get hold on him. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, he overwhelms forms, forms do not overwhelm him, he overwhelms sounds, sounds do not overwhelm him. He overwhelms odors. Odors do not overwhelm him. So, the similarly taste, tactile object, and mental phenomena. And so, all that he can control these things. You know, having the seen a form, if you actually grab the signs and features of that one, then that particular fame taken over you. If we actually get rid of that one, then there's no link in between that form and yourself. So you are free from that that form.
But if you look at the side.
Well, other side, yes, that is also a possibility. You can see the other way around if some you are saying how to prevent it, right? Yeah. So when you actually look at the other side also, there may be something else that troubling you. Okay. So normally Buddhist monks, you know, when they are walking, they actually look at this very few meters in front of them and walk, not looking this way, that way, sort of thing. So that guarding of the senses. So this one lead to the all the defilements. Now he actually getting rid of birth, aging, old, he got rid of. In this way, friend, that one is uncorrupted. So then the blessed one got up and address the Venerable Moggallana. Thus, good Moggallana, you have spoken well to the bhikkhus, the exposition on the corrupted and the uncorrupted. This is what the Venerable Moggallana said, that which I approved, related those bhikkhus related in the Venerable Mahamoggallana statement. So, Buddha actually, when sleeps, that he actually set time, you know, I get up in such time. So, There were other discourses as well. And Venerable Ananda was asked to deliver because Buddha got a back pain. And so as soon as the discourse finished, Buddha getting up and approve these statements. So that is actually the end of that discourse. So the other side of that paper, you can see that you can see last time we discussed this the discourse is about this 10 things, you know, the unskilled states about the, we call the Trivida Duscharita and Trivida Sucharita, these three kind of good conduct, three kind of bad conduct, right? So the three kind of we discussed the diagram about the three kind of bad conduct, how it's leading to the unskilled states, and today there is this three kind of good conduct. And you can see those arrows that I had about this bad conduct one, I have actually removed over here for clarity. Otherwise, their connections are there. For example, if someone actually getting rid of covetousness, he is actually getting rid of this the stealing as well. You know, their bundle and the line, both are getting rid of. So you can see I left two arrows over there, right view, with the right view that the non-ill will arises, and with the right view non-covetousness arises. The other arrows are there from all those three. So from these good ones, you can see that refrain from killing leads to non-hatred, and refrain from stealing leads to aloba or non-greed, and now non-delusion, amoha. Is I think I better read this part in from the discourse itself. This is appearing in Petakopadesa again in Kuddaka Nikaya. Here, what is non-greed as a root of profit? It is non-greed about any element, non-greediness, unwishing, unaspiration, unwanting. So that is explaining what is mean by non-greed. That is non-greed as root of profit. What is it the root of? It is the root of non-greed born profitable bodily, verbal and mental actions. So three kind of actions. And of cognizance, concomitant ideas associated therewith. Or alternatively, since the noble eightfold path is called profitable, this is kusala, this non-greed is the root of the three path factors. Of which three? Of right intention, right effort, right concentration. So you can see the non-greed here lead to the right thought, and then the right effort and right concentration. Eightfold path. Because of the non-greed, you have three. That is right thought, right effort, and right concentration. So you can see that the right thought is the thought of non-harm. So thought of non-malevolence, and the thought of renunciation. So having seen that the sense pleasures are actually creating problems, we think about the renunciation, those things. How do you renounce? That because of the root is the greed, the non-greed. Because of non-greed, one can actually get rid of those things. And then the right effort, what we do in the right effort, that is effort to discard the evil that has arisen. Effort to prevent arising of unarising evil. So again, because of the non-greed, one is going to get rid of whatever the senses, desire, thinking, all those things that has arisen. I want to get rid of it. It is not for me. It is not mine. So he is actually getting rid of it. And in the concentration, right concentration, so we leave out the senses, desire and, you know, the bad things and anger and all those things. Leaving out that one, we abide in the first jhana concentration where there is this rapture, pleasure, all those things, and going beyond those states. So, there's non-greed lead to three. So, if you want to have that one out of the eightfold path, well, think about the meditation time. I will give up this greeding for these things, and that lead to these three good things. And then the non-hatred, adosa, is leading to three things again. Right speech, right action, right life. So there are three things, is the linking. And then the non-delusion is leading to all the right view and the right mindfulness. See, the right view is that understanding about the Four Noble Truths itself. That birth is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering, sickness, that's suffering, that understanding. And what leads to suffering is this craving. With the cessation of craving comes the cessation of suffering. And the Eightfold Path is this one. So he understands this one, that is amoha. And actually what is leading to amoha is that all the other, the righteous thing over here, in the first line over there, those things lead to amoha, non-delusion. So, I mean, we can go on with this this one quite a lot. There are a bit more dhamma in this one. So this is that in brief, these three. So having this three kind of good conduct lead to this these good roots, and that one leads to this Eightfold Path, the fulfillment. So the discourse today is the step before this one. Okay, so there's that the Indriya Sanghara, or this the restraint of the faculties we were talking about. Restraint of the faculties lead to three kind of good conduct. Three kind of good conduct leads to this actually seven factors of enlightenment, mindfulness, and seven factors of enlightenment. So the Eightfold Path will be established. You can see all the Eightfold Path is based upon these skill states of the mind and the and kusala, that is this you know, that you are refraining from killing, stealing, all those things. And then so there's no limit over here. You see that if you think about killing, there's a limit in that case, because you are talking about this animal I'm killing. Then when you say refrain from that one, it is you are refraining from everything else. Every animal is an exclusion of the whole thing, right? And for the skill states, there's no limit. It goes very, very, you know, far away. It's the vast, has the biggest sort of thing. So the Eightfold Path built on that one, and is sustained on that, this meritorious, you know, skill states. And so that's the ground. So if you are going through the Eightfold Path, just check whether I have these things. You know, you might not have the right view at once. You might have a mundane right view, you know, that, you know, it's good to give, for example, and good not to kill, that sort of thing. That becomes the right view as well. And checking these factors, whether these factors are there with me, you know, am I lying? Do I have this harsh speech, frivolous talks, all those things? And checking that one itself is good. And because they lead to the other one. So there is an arrow backward as well in certain way. You know, this whole Eightfold Path lead to the amoha. That is the root condition for this, not the root condition, footing for this amoha, non-delusion, is the Eightfold Path. And you can see from the right view, the right thought proceeds from the right view, that arrow over there. Right speech proceeds from right thought. Right action proceeds from right speech. Right livelihood proceeds from right action. Right effort proceeds from right livelihood. Right mindfulness proceeds from right effort. And right concentration proceeds from right mindfulness. This is in Mahachattarika Sutra, middle end saying. And over there Buddha said that the right knowledge proceeds from right concentration. And the right liberation proceeds from right knowledge. So there's another two added to this diagram. So the knowledge and the liberation. Yes, it's a bit heavy. Although you actually see this one in a diagram like this, this is very, very heavy. You contemplate, there's quite a lot. I mean, an arahant would understand this one completely. It is that big. And this was constructed by the Buddha. And that's the highest sort of, Buddha said, out of the constructed Dhamma, this is the highest. Highest construction is this one. That the highest in the sense, I can't remember the word, exact word, that is the extreme point. Supreme, yeah, sort of thing, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
These three processes
will be
the third one. Is it subconscious?
Subconscious? No, no, no. There's no, no.
This is quite obvious that we
have. Right. Ah, well, you mean when we actually do it, we are doing in the subconsciousness. Well, the according to Abhidhamma, there's no subconsciousness. There's only consciousness. It's only the Western philosophy that talks about the consciousness and subconsciousness, because they can coexist. And in the Buddhist theory, no two consciousness can coexist. So that we have to drop the word subconsciousness over here. We are doing this one. We, most of the time, what we have is either anger or aversion. We do have this one, but you are not paying attention to it. Because that, you know, that when you are driving a car, when it is going in a smooth surface, it's going and you don't worry. When you get into a, you know, hole or water hole, something, you know, jumping, then you actually notice it like that. There is this pleasurable feeling, I am happy and sort of thing, you know, I'm excited about it. And a displeasure, then I remember, you know, that when it is moving smoothly without any problem, I just ignore that one.
Is it without intention? No intention?
Well, we have trained our mind that way. We have trained our mind to live with that particular situation. Yeah. And if it is pleasurable, well, then we are sort of grabbing and holding. We are so excited about it. And if it is anger, you know, painful, you know, I'm seeing the doctor and all those things, and it's happening as well. But the neutral one, you have neutral one quite a lot.
And the external factors drive that too. See, there is something in a shop that everybody else, not everybody else, the people who has money would buy that, and people who want that but cannot afford
just will, don't think about it.
No, they would think, and they would be unhappy because they cannot get that.
Oh, then there is anger.
Yeah, that's what nice. That's the middle one. Then if there is some people that they don't have money, but it is there because since they cannot afford, not that other person wanted to get that, because of that he gets anger. The other person, he doesn't have money, but he doesn't want to get, I mean, not, doesn't mind not getting that, so he doesn't have anger.
I mean, that depends on the person to person. Yeah, I mean, you do have this example, you know, the chair is a one good example, you know, that not comfortable, uncomfortable sort of scenario you can see. In the office also, you have these things that you go to the office and just do this one for the sake of doing. And you don't cling to that one, you don't hate that one, because you're so used to do that one, so you keep on doing that one. So there are these scenarios, but you're not paying attention to that one.
Yeah, that in that neutral situation, the emotional formation forms because I'm still clinging to that neutral feeling. Is that it?
Yes, yes. You are clinging to that particular one in as well. Yeah, because there is a construction because of the amoha, the delusion. There is this construction, and I like it too. I like it better than the other ones actually, in a certain sense, because it's not, it's a bit stable. That the pleasure, you know, that is only short lasting. The displeasure also like that one, unless you are putting your effort again and again to maintain it. The other one is, you know, just like a smoothly, it's there. You can sit down in neither comfortable nor uncomfortable chair for a long time. Likewise, that the good equanimity, as Buddha said, that one is the most stable. The pleasurable feeling in the third dhyana concentration, or the rapturous one also, they are all unstable. And when you are indifferent to the pleasurable feeling that has arisen, then you become equanimity level. And the equanimity is as more refined versions. You know, the space is infinite, consciousness is infinite, that those refined versions are there. And so one would actually reach that higher states, and then he thinks this is also constructed. If someone can think that this is also constructed, therefore it's subject to failing, and then one can get rid of. Otherwise, one would attach that one, and they be born in those worlds and live for eons.
One other clarification on this today's discussion. When I go through these three lines, what I found is very much similar to the volitional formation, which is part of five aggregates of clinging. And it is the same thing you are talking about in great detail?
Well, yes. This, you see that the first part over here is actually leading to the last one over here. The second one is also leading to the last one over here. So, out of this one, what is there is this avidya is there, ignorance is there. Because of this ignorance, we construct sanskar, volitional formations, come to be. So, with the volitional formation, the consciousness, the whole thing, particular samuppada, the dependent origination, is happening with this one. And whenever we have the greed, there is delusion. Whenever we have the anger, there is this delusion. It is part and parcel in that one. So delusion is a very big thing. That's what that
delusion is the lack of understanding of suffering.
Lack of understanding Four Noble Truths, not only suffering. You need to see the arising phenomena, passing away phenomena, and the path leading to that one. All three bundled in that.
But it's a right wheel. It's a forerunner.
Yes.
Maybe once the forerunner and then some environment.
Right effort and the right mind, right mindfulness. They circle around. In every, this eightfold path, right view comes first for anything. The right view is the thing that comes from. This is good, this is bad. For example, is the someone who is actually used to smoke. And so he is going to the doctor and he got some sort of sickness and doctor actually examine him and say that young man, you got this lung problem and if you keep smoking then, you know. So he got a sort of a right view, I should not be smoking, I should prevent this one. So one day he actually sees someone who is actually smoking. And so what is his tendency? Having been smoking, I want to do that one as well. And so then the right view comes. If we can remember what doctor said, that one is also coming to his mind. The right view comes and remind. Then he knows that smoking is bad and not smoking is good. So he put effort. So that becomes his right view at that time. It's not the noble right view. It is his right view at that time. So then he puts effort to get rid of the wrong view to achieve the right view. That is, to get rid of smoking, to achieve non-smoking. And he is mindful, he is achieving non-smoking and giving up the smoking. So these three things circle around. And regarding thought also, you know, the sense pleasures are bad for me. This one is actually creating me births and all those things, right? So then it will come to his mind. Well, I should be giving up because I don't want the suffering. You know, that this one leads to suffering. So therefore, I want to give this one up. So then, because of the right view, he got the right thought. So this one is now circling around. He's putting effort to get rid of these sense pressures and all those things. And mindful, he get rid of that. So every step of the way, it is circling around these three things. It's the forerunner, yes. Okay, we stop for today then.